Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. Today in the New York Times, we had a video from three former professors of Yale explaining why they are leaving the country and heading up to the University of Toronto because of all of the incipient fascism. The professors are Marcy Shore, Timothy Snyder, Jason Stanley. I imagine you have some thoughts about this, my friend.
Well, everybody keeps sending it to me because it turns out I'm in it. I'm in this New York Times piece. And it's like, they are saying they are leaving because of the fascism. They're like, hey, we're historians. We know what it was like back in the early, 30s. And, people didn't see it coming, but we see this coming and we got to get out of here. But then they show a bunch of clips of people sort of warning how bad it is. And one of them is my, close-up face. It's like me on Nicole Wallace. To make people afraid of speaking out against him.
It's like when you showed up in the Mark Carney ad.
I did show up in the Mark Carney ad.
It was so funny. The queen of B-roll.
The Canadian, I wish we had done this, but the now Canadian prime minister, used in his closing ad, his closing ad was about how they didn't want to be like America, then they didn't want us to be weak and divided. And it cuts to a clip of me yelling at Scott Jennings on CNN. And I was like, hey, I'm glad I can be there for you, bud. But it is funny when people send me these things, I'm like, why? I don't care about this ad from the Canadian guy. And then I'm like, oh, I'm in it. Cool. But watching the thing from the professors was interesting. And actually, I really do wonder what you think about it in light of the triad that you wrote today, which was a bleak bummer of a triad directed squarely at my worldview, and which,
I mean,
we're going to unpack really, this.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. That whole thing was Sarah Bain.
So. Oh, I don't think that. It wasn't intended that way. It was really me talking with myself.
Our listeners do not know how sarcastic you're being right now. Okay.
Not
they
true.
Can't tell. I can see it in your eyes. I know. We're going to do this tomorrow on the secret pod. So if you guys want to hear a knockdown drag out between me and JVL, first subscribe to the Bulwark, then read his triad, then come listen to us on the secret pod on Friday, tomorrow. But for today, since we're going to have to spend all day tomorrow fighting, I wonder what you think about this in light of your idea that sort of people are unsalvageable and American voters are unsalvageable. Do you think that it's 1931 in America right now and that we are headed in the direction that makes one feel like as an academic you need to go practice ply your trade elsewhere? Because I'll just say as a short matter, I don't. I both don't think people should be leaving or fleeing the country. I certainly don't want it to be as a result of something I said. And they were sort of using me as a stand-in for why people had to get the heck out of Dodge. And I don't love that because I think we have to stay here and fight is just the shortest version of what I think is important. But you might have a different take on it.
I don't know. I mean, that's the only answer. Look, in 1931, people didn't realize it was 1931.
Sure, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that in nearly every part of American history leading up to the last few years, with some exceptions following the conclusion of the Civil War, we could definitively say that it was not 1931. What is unique about the moment right now is that you can't say that, I don't think. You know, you look at it and say, I don't know. Things don't, I mean, you know, there are some encouraging signs the courts have held, right? There are, so far, there are some not encouraging signs. Kilmer Abrego Garcia is still in a foreign gulag because the courts have pushed back, but the government hasn't complied yet. We won't know for, this is the problem. This is the problem of the 1930s, and this is the problem with authoritarian attempts, is it always, you can always construct a reason for why it's not as bad as it looks until the day when the tanks are actually in the streets.
Yeah, I was going to say, you sort of don't know that's where you are until it's too late.
Yeah. And I think that's, that is, I think what these three professors were saying, it's what I sort of think, candidly, that it could be. It could be. And, you know, like the history of these things, the nomenclatura, the intellectuals, they are the first ones to get put up against the wall. It's not crazy to me. Like our friend Bed Witness wrote a really stirring piece at Lawfare today, pushing back against this as defeatism, and he makes a lot of great points. And I love that. And I love you, like in your like fight. I love where your guys' hearts are. That said, I do not have the same level of certainty that you guys do that we aren't in that neighborhood. Does that make sense?
It does. Tell me a little bit more about Witness's piece, because I didn't read it. What are some of the top line points that he makes about staying? So, because that's my, I mean, me and Ben are also good friends. It doesn't surprise me that, and based on who Ben is, it doesn't surprise me that he has sort of a fight mentality. And I don't know exactly what points he was making are, but I suspect, certainly if I wrote a piece, which chances of that are slim, but it would be about... even in 1931, like who was fighting, right? Who was fighting as you watched people slowly capitulate? And I don't know enough about everything that was happening at the politics of the time, but I do know that the way that you avoid something like that happening again is by fighting it, right? By pushing back, by making sure that Trump's not successful.
So this is what Ben says. And what Ben says is that the moment we're in is absolutely dangerous, but that the dangers are different for different people, and that the people who are the most danger right now are people who are like driving to work in Georgia and, you know, have been in the country since they were four and went to college and have a job, but are going to get pulled over and arrested. Like that person is in a very great deal of danger. But people who are American citizens, who have means and who have platforms which they can use, those people are not yet at tremendous risk, right? They're at some risk. It's not nothing. Like, you know, the president did issue EOs targeting Krebs and Miles Taylor. But that in the privilege that people like Ben, is what he says. He says, people like me, the privilege that we've been afforded really requires us to stay and fight.
Yeah, so I agree with that. I think I've said literally I think you said something very similar verbatim. That we have the privilege of platform. We have the privilege of American citizenship. We have the privilege of free speech. We have the privilege of being able to hire attorneys. And so I just... this is what makes me angry. What they're doing is not the same as what the lawyers are doing exactly, because they're just people trying to protect their money and their access to this administration, and they are trading democracy to do it. The thing about like professors and academics getting out of Dodge sooner rather than later because they fear that we are headed down the path of, you know, Germany 1930, 1932, 1933. I just think, I think that oftentimes we are not alarmed enough in this moment. So I don't want to accuse them of alarmism. I do think, though, that like they specifically were far from being threatened, like not in a real way. And that I think that the signal that it sends to leave the country is a similar one. It's different, but it's similar to the law firms or the universities or the media companies, the other people who've caved, which is that to say like, is basically to say like, we're already too far gone, right? Like, what's the point of standing up? It's too, we should just need to put our heads down. And I just think that's exactly the wrong thing to do in this moment, like exactly the opposite. And so since I'm in the little New York Times thing, I would like just like to register. And it's me saying, like, this is meant to chill. This is meant to menace. And all that is true. It is our choice, though, whether or not we give into that. We have agency here and we should use it.
Let me just as a so I want to grant as an ideological matter, what you're saying is right. But as a prudential matter, this would be true if everybody was leaving, but to have a couple high profile people leave and try to raise the alarm on the way out the door and presumably continue to write from abroad and to stand up for democracy and to attack the regime, that could be useful in a way, couldn't it?
Yeah,
again, it would be bad if everybody did it.
Right.
But it's not terrible to have like Tim Snyder's a real grown up. You know, and him going and doing this, like, that says something. And I assume he's not just going to sit around and start writing about the founding like a bunch of fucking conservative intellectuals have done, who decided that 2017 was a good time to really just disengage from all the hurly-burly of modern stuff. And, you know, it's time to build. We're gonna really look back and, you know, the stuff that endures and not get distracted with all the comings and goings. None of us will even remember 2 decades from now. I can see a use in that, actually. Is that crazy?
You can see a use in what they're doing. Yeah, it's not crazy. And even as you say it, you know, this is one of those areas where I think my gut reaction, just because I'm so like, that is not what I would do. But I think you're right, and I'd have to think about it more to know how certain I feel about this. But I think you could be right that perhaps what they are doing is simply trying to say, like, everybody's being too complacent about what's happening, which is a sentiment I agree with. I just hate for people for their takeaway to be, so I need to get myself out of Dodge, as opposed to raise the alarm, I guess, inside the country and also do. But I guess you're right. The internet's different now. It's not like they're walking. They can still raise alarms from a safer place, I guess.
This has happened all through history, right? Dissidents will leave a country because it's not safe, but they don't disappear. Like, they keep writing, attacking the regime from abroad. I think it matters that these three, I don't know Professor Shore or Stanley at all. I don't know them personally, any of them at all, but I know Timothy Snyder's work fairly well. I think it's a big deal that somebody of his stature would say, this is bad enough that I am going someplace else. And you guys should all be concerned about this. You should be, if you're seeing what I'm seeing, that should make an impression on you. I think that is useful for, I don't know, the resistance, for the people who still care about democracy. And it would be bad if everybody, you know, if it was a run on the bank, if it was a jailbreak and everybody left, that would not be great. But this is, I think at the end of the day, it's okay.
As I think it through, let me offer then, I guess, my another part of my pushback, which is if, and I don't know if this was the case in, as we went into sort of early 1930s Germany, whether or not there becomes a dominant sense over time where, like, at first it feels like cajoling or like you have some say in the matter. And then at some point you become afraid and you join the dominant scary thing to save yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you end up giving Trump too much power, right? The power of for people to think the time and the opportunity to push back is over, that they will have missed the window of being able to do something, and that like pretty soon it gets too scary for them to speak up at all. And I think that I don't want people to have that message. I don't think it's true in this moment. I think you can still do a lot to brush Trump back with public opinion, and that you've got to go fight for that.
Yep.
And I think like there's still enough virtue in this republic, if not to save it, in order to prolong it, in order to live to fight another day, in order to, you know, wait Trump out. Like they're, and again, like, I don't know. I think it's too early to say we're descending into that level of madness. And I just worry that it creates a level of defeatism that gives people the sense that they too need to opt out of fighting back.
I hear that. I think that's a totally valid concern. On the other hand, the people who are going to capitulate are already doing it, and they don't have to be told. I have two friends within conservative world who are still hanging in conservative world, who were in the last several days both fired, and they were not. The people who fired them did not need to be told by Trump to get rid of any dissident voices.
Mm-hmm.
They understood. You know, this is it's the Vaclav Havel greengrocer story, right? And this is how authoritarianism works. So I worry much more about the people who simply refuse to stand up at all, more than I do about the people who've been standing up, deciding to fold up their tent and leave, because there are a handful of them. But the number of people,
well, I think that's really
who are never going to say any boo. They were just going to go along to get along. There's another line about this. I don't know who this is, Hemingway. You know, there are many people who do not know that they are fascists, but will find out when the time comes. Like that turns out to be super true.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, this is dark.
I'm sorry.
That's
me being me.
I know. I think I thought I had more pushback in me on them, and it turns out that I have some pushback, but that I take your point about it's not entirely irrational.
Let me try to frame it in a way that might really appeal to you.
Do that and do it in a way that closes us out for this video.
In the same way that when we came to like opposing Trumpism, the answer wasn't like this path is the way to do it. Everybody has to do it. The idea was like nobody knows what's best. Let 1,000 flowers bloom. Let everybody do and like we'll figure things out. I sort of take that approach here. Like if Timothy Snyder leaving and making a stink about it, maybe that'll work. Sarah and Ben Wittes staying here and, going to the barricades, maybe that'll work. Let's everybody try in the way that we think is best and that we think we can do the most effectively.
Well, JVL, it's a rare chat where I really do come your way. That's not going to happen tomorrow on the Secret Podcast. I will just give you fair warning.
Oh, boy. I might be sick tomorrow morning. It's hard to say. No, I may have to call in. You know, we could do a solo show where you just rant about me straight to camera for 45 minutes.
No. You might feel I'm going to read you passages of yourself back to you, and we're going to talk about them one at a time.
Guys, hit subscribe, hit like, follow us, because you need uplifting content that is hashtag blessed in your life. And that's what we give you right here at The Bulwark. Good luck, America.
Bye. Moto Casino.
America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.